We're back on In Focus, News Radio KMAN, chatting here today with Tim Schaefer, Assistant Professor of Communication Studies at K-State and Assistant Director of the Institute for Civic Discourse and Democracy. And, you know, we're talking a little bit about civic discourse here, and you mentioned something kind of interesting here during the break that's been going on at the McCain Institute here about a certain hashtag here. Tell me a little bit more about this.
Yeah, so on the 25th, it was just the one-year anniversary of John McCain's passing, and so the McCain Institute, which is based out of Arizona State and located in D.C., they were using the hashtag Acts of Civility. And a number of other organizations, the National Institute for Civil Discourse, for example, and others were really, I think, broadening some of that conversation to say, you know, how do we reflect on one of these moments, the passing of someone like former Senator McCain, who was, I think, in many ways, an example of a politician, an elected official who functioned in ways that are quite different from the disposition or at least the experience we're seeing a lot right now. And so there was a broadening of some conversations, some really good op-eds. Cindy McCain wrote one in the Washington Post and a number of other interviews. And I was just reading one just a bit ago from the USA Today talking about, you know, the acknowledgement that we need more constructive conversations across party lines, moving away from some of these polarized positions and rhetoric. And at the same time, we're really challenged in some significant ways, which is partly why I think one of the projects of the National Institute for Civil Discourse, which works with state legislators through a program called Next Generation, is working with legislators here in Kansas. They were just together weeks ago at the national convening in Nashville, and that's part of that project that I was referencing earlier. I think there's some real promise because a lot of those individuals move on to elected office at the national level, and so how do we help create conditions for people to step into some of those roles that they bring with them the acknowledgement and experience of actually being able to collaborate more or at least be open-minded to positions that are not their own or their party leadership.
You know, I was thinking here as we're talking, you know, the two political parties, Republican and Democrat, have become so polarized in the recent years that the middle ground is kind of disappearing, it seems like. And is there an opportunity, do you think, for that to come back here? Can we ever reestablish that?
Well, I mean, so there's lots of interesting studies that look kind of, you know, there are those in political science in particular who study parties, and you can look at trends. There's some really interesting graphics that show over the course of, say, from the 1940s to relatively recently, the ways that they kind of spread out. And so we might think of, you know, we'll just for simplicity's sake, we'll use kind of blue for the Democrats and red for Republican, although historically it was actually the opposite. So if you look at old maps from the Civil War, it was just the other way around. So that only comes around because of the new media in the 90s. But the point is we would see these kind of scatter blots. There'd be a lot of crossover, so there would be these liberal Republicans, depending on the era, very conservative Democrats, particularly in the South, liberal Republicans in the North. And so we had this interesting kind of composition, and we've heard it from particularly elected officials at the federal level who have either recently retired or have been there for a long time. They would speak about the relationships they had with those across the aisle. So, like, for example, when Senator McCain passed away, you heard and saw the response to that because he was seen in a certain way. But beyond him, right, we don't just want to have one example of this. We had opportunities for people to interact. And so folks in Washington, for example, wouldn't jet set back and forth because it wasn't efficient, it wasn't convenient. They mostly lived there, right? So they would be on the floor of the Senate or the House through the week, and then on evenings or weekends, they would be spending time with these other legislators across these party lines. So they got to know each other, I mean, in human terms rather than just kind of these caricatures. But pointedly to your question, one of the great challenges is that we've seen this this polarization kind of be leveraged in some significant ways. And so in the early 90s, we see this real distinct separation. Very few people who would cross those lines, which is why we can often think of very particular names like
Arlen Specter.
I was going to say Arlen Specter. I was like, wait, is that the right name? Yeah, Arlen Specter and like a Joe Manchin. These kinds of folks who would kind of stand out of the crowd. But that's very hard to do in the especially when we think about kind of money and politics and all of this. So it just complicates the reality of people existing in those ways. The one of the biggest challenges, especially as I talk with international colleagues and others from other countries, we have a system that does not necessarily reward that, right? We're not a parliament, so you can't have these kind of niche views and then it gets absorbed by one of the mainstream parties. We have pretty solidified boundaries. We have other political parties in the United States, but by and large, we have one to the left and to the right, and that's the space that we exist in. And so finding opportunities to exist somewhere in between, for example, is really tough, especially as Pew, for example, has done an interesting tracking project. And so you can see the intensity of party affiliation moving away from the center and actually kind of solidifying in the more extreme kind of wings. And, I mean, unsurprisingly, we experience that too, right? So the nomination process for Democratic presidential candidates is creating this kind of vetting process. Are you Democratic enough in the ways that some people would talk about that? So kind of taking the positions that are further to the left, for example, in contrast to more moderate kind of views on a number of topics. And I think this is a really challenging thing, right? Because if we just set up this kind of warring kind of frame, then we don't have a lot of space. And as we know from some of the research, that a number of people who identify as independent are inherently leaning one way or another. They're not truly just up in the air. And so even for those who are unaffiliated, which is a very high number in the United States, they're still being pulled either one way or the other. And so it's this is why it's so challenging right now, is that we exist in such a kind of a polarized encampment that it's hard to break out of that.
Yeah, there's very few politicians that will stand on their own. I used to interview one guy when I lived in Nebraska, Senator Ben Sasse.
Yeah.
And he's maybe the closest example I could think of as somebody who kind of thinks more, and maybe not always along party lines, although he is a conservative Republican.
Yeah. I mean, I, and it's not to say there aren't, right? He's an interesting person. You know, he's written about some of this too in his relatively recent book. And so there are those who don't kind of toe the line, but it's easier to operate within those boundaries than kind of constraints. And so that's why we have the very few examples of people, kind of the exemplar of, you know, I'm thinking of Ted Kennedy right now and John McCain, some of the historical examples where they were collaborating on things, and other officials as well, that it's hard to buck the line. And especially at the national level, right? When we get, and this is, I think, the importance, and it's always nice to have local government elected officials kind of talking about some of this work too. They operate at a different level. National politics is real, but it's also a show, right? It's playing out on a national stage, truly. Whereas I think local and state officials have a different kind of responsibility and expectation, because they have to attend to people that they are interacting with very regularly and routinely in the communities that they live. And so I think for ordinary people too, to see that politics, even though it also often gets kind of situated as a negative kind of pejorative term, it means something at the local level. So if we're going to talk about a sales tax increase, what does that really mean, right? I'm going to see what that's going to go to or not, right, if we don't pass it. So those kinds of things, in contrast to just saying we're going to do a tax cut at the federal level, you don't experience it or interpret it in the same ways that you do in these kind of localized ways. And I think the beauty of that at that local scale is that you can cross some of those lines and you see it much more as an issue rather than kind of through this partisan frame.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about rhetoric. Why should people care about a politician's rhetoric when it comes to politics in general, I guess.
Well, as someone who is situated in the field of communication studies, we talk about language and symbols. They have meaning, right? I mean, this is the currency that we have as human beings. I'm breathing through my throat and stuff's going on and I'm making sounds that you understand as words, right? This kind of stuff. And so the way that we talk, what we say is significant and important. And so in one breath, we could just be like, well, that's just rhetoric, right? But that's what makes the world. I mean, so the way that we articulate our understanding, our philosophies, our vision, that has a tremendous ability to shape not how only I think about something, but how others do too. I mean, so when you have a platform, the discourse is really significant. And you can say, you know, I don't care what he says if he's doing the things that I want to do, but you can't disconnect these things, right? They are part and parcel because that's inherently leading to an action or an inaction, depending on the situation. So when we talk about rhetoric kind of in this popular way, in that way that we're discussing now, I think it's important for us to say, what is that relationship between those pieces of what is being said, how is it being said, and where does it kind of meet the road, so to speak?
Very good. Yeah, that word comes up so much anymore in the news, and some people don't care about it, and other people, they take it as the gospel. So
yeah. I mean, and I think this is one of the complications is that we, are maybe devaluing in some significant ways the discourse, right? So then it becomes, well, if I want something to happen, if I want to win, so to speak, if I want my team to win, we're going to do whatever needs to be done.
Very good. Well, it's always good to talk with you. We'll see about getting you in here next month on a different date.
We'll figure it out.
All right. Tim Schaefer again from K-State. Thanks for being here.
It's good to be here. Thanks.
That'll do it here for In Focus today. Tomorrow on In Focus, we will talk education. We have Riley County Schools on the schedule, as well as Manhattan Catholic Schools and Flint Hills Christian Schools.